Today we explore an exciting theme.
Prosperity and abundance. How to cultivate a mindset that attracts money and happiness.
In one place, the power of your voice with Mike Murphy.
Hey guys, welcome to the Power of Your Voice podcast. I'm your host, Mike Murphy, and we're super excited that you're here today. Hey, for you guys that own a home there in America, are you getting a little concerned about the prices and where they're headed and when's the best time to get out? Or maybe you haven't bought a home yet, and now you're thinking, oh my gosh, what happened to the rates? When should I get in? Where's the bottom? What should I do? Well, you're in good luck today. We have one of the most amazing international real estate investment teachers in the world, an author of over 16 books, and New York Times and the Wall Street Journal best-selling author Robert Shemin is with us today, one of the most sought-after real estate investment experts in the world. His wealth-building strategies have helped thousands attain total financial freedom for life, while his charitable work, something near and dear to my heart, both at home and abroad, has contributed to lifting distressed communities out of poverty and despair. Robert, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, an honor to be here, Mike. Always great to see you, and welcome everybody.
I got to ask you, Robert, so it's strange. We're both Americans here in Medellin. How long have you been here, and why are you here?
20 years, and even stranger, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and my whole family's going, where are you? What are you doing? Why? I came here 20 years ago. I've been to 84 countries, can live anywhere, and I came here just to visit about 20 years ago and never left. Wow. I had lived a little bit in Costa Rica part-time and Nicaragua, and was living in Miami, but I just love it here.
Without enticing people to move here, what do you love about living here?
Well, the minute I landed, people were just so nice. I'm from Nashville, where I think people are really, really nice.
Yeah.
They're really, really, really nice here. Everybody's happy. The land is absolutely beautiful. We're in these beautiful green mountains. The weather is perfect. The food is great. You can live like a king or queen. Great attitude, beautiful people, and I just love it.
I couldn't agree with you more. All right, so over 16 books on real estate. That's obviously your passion. How did it start? When did it start, and why?
Great question. Complete accident. So a lot of people don't know this about me. I had a pretty rough start, like a lot of people, you know, a lot of negativity. I couldn't really walk. I had braces on my legs. So I was about 12. I couldn't speak very well. I had a bad speech impediment. I don't know why, but I talked about this. Really didn't go to school the first 8, 9, 10 years. Went a little bit, but couldn't do it. Then when I was about 11, a woman spent a year with me, taught me how to speak. My family's kind of regretting it now because I won't shut up. I got the braces off. And my family's like, wow, now Robert can do something. Because before that, I was like, he can't do anything. He's worthless. We don't use that word anymore, retarded.
Right.
I got all that. And I flunked pretty much every class.
Wow.
Went out on the street. I was a bit homeless when I was 15. And when I was 18, they did a study. I never finished high school. They realized I had dyslexia.
Wow.
And then I actually went to university and studied later. But I was kind of struggling. I was working in restaurants as a waiter, busboy. I tried to sell insurance. Never sold any. It was a commission only. Kind of sad. And we were selling insurance to wealthy individuals. Here's how I got into real estate. I was brought up, like a lot of people, that to start a business or be successful, you got to come from a rich family. It takes money to make money. My family was like, we don't have any money. We're poor. Work. Go to school. Suffer. If you don't like it, suffer more. Work for the man. And maybe if you work really hard and suffer enough, when you're 60 or 70, you can retire, have fun for a year or two, and then you die. That was pretty much our plan. Parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, stressed about money all the time. We never had any poverty mentality. And I was about 29 years old, was referred to the insurance company, this super wealthy gentleman, went to his office, looked like a Jed Clampett from the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, homeless guy, very simple office. I'm like, man, another wasted day. I start talking to this guy, and I go, I actually left because I'm like, you know, he looks broke. I thought he was like the plumber. I used to be judgmental, negative. And you never know when your life's going to change. I believe changes come in quantum seconds when you meet the right person, have the right attitude. I had a bad attitude back then. I left because he didn't buy any insurance and I thought he was broke. Went back to the office and said, I forgot to ask you a question. What do you do for a living amongst all this junk? He didn't like that. He grabbed me and took me to the back. He goes, I'm going to show you something, boy. I thought something bad was going to happen, you know, one of those movies. And he opened an old accounting book. He didn't have a computer. And he had 121 houses paid for.
Wow.
Now, he also fixed and sold and rehabbed. That was just his rental. He goes, I started about 18 years ago buying real estate in Nashville with no money. I'm like, how do you do that? He goes, I bought a bunch of property, learned how to do it. I take 6 months vacation a year now and make millions of dollars. And I'm looking at this guy, no background, no education, never finished 9th grade. And I'm like, if this guy can do this, maybe I can. And he taught me how to find deals, finance them. And for the first year, like most people, I didn't do anything. I thought, wondered, worried, analyzed, hypothesized. How many of y'all been doing that? paralysis of analysis. Right. And then I finally bought my first property with a money partner. So he taught me, whatever you don't have, find someone that has it. I found a guy with great credit. I had no credit, no money. And I started buying houses. My goal was to buy one a year for 15 years. And the first year I did nothing. The second year, when I let go mentally and said, I'm going to do this, I bought 14 properties in 11 months. The next year, I bought like 20. I was up to 780 properties in about 5 years.
Wow. So you're selling insurance, probably not doing that well.
Never sold one. Okay.
you had this fortunate incident where you met this man who mentored you and taught you this.
Changed my life.
What was it about initially? Because the first year was tough, but you hung in there. So where did that stick-to-itiveness come from? Is it something with your childhood and all your problems? You said, hey, I'm going to stay with this and make it work? Or what were you thinking?
You know, I give it my family a lot of credit. I mean, we had a lot of problems growing up, but they were the immigrants from Russia, my grandparents. Work hard, first in, last out, stick with it, suffer, you know, integrity. My great uncle, Will Shemus, like my grandfather, won the Medal of Honor. Tough people, hardworking, and that's where it comes from. And I really got to thank my father, grandparents, all my family for that. Everybody worked hard.
So you got a work ethic from your family. Yeah.
And I will say that my uncle and dad somehow bought a farm that never made any money. I don't know if you ever grew up on a farm, but we worked. My grandfather said we work union hours, 8 hours before lunch and 8 hours after lunch. Never made any money, but we had food.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the work ethic too. You got to work. You got to do the effort. You got to put the time in.
So you're like 40 years in this career right now.
Yeah, something like that.
And you've published over 16 real estate books.
Yep.
And you also teach personal development and motivate and inspire people to become the best version of themselves. Which do you enjoy most, the personal development or the real estate?
You know, it's a great question. I really enjoy all of it. And I'll tell you this. I know you are in the car business and you're a successful entrepreneur. I still love doing deals.
Okay.
Don't have to. I've retired 4 times now. I love doing a deal. We're selling a property today, and I'm just excited for the process. It's just exciting. It's a challenge. Every deal is different. Every market's different. But what I really have found, you know, when I started out, I was like, man, I just need some money. I just need a few bucks, please. I was so struggling, so depressed. All my friends were pretty broke, most of my family. And whatever your goal is fine. They'll change. And someone asked me this morning, what keeps you going? Now my goal is helping, giving back. And also, you know this, you mentor people. And anyone listening, you've helped somebody, a kid. Maybe you're a minister, maybe you're a soccer coach, maybe you help your cousin. When you get that text or phone or email or someone says, hey, you changed my life, you helped me, you don't really realize it when you're doing it.
Yep.
That to me is better than a $100,000 check, which I still like.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with those, or a $10,000 check. That's what life is all about, of service.
Yeah. You know, I started writing personal development books because they'd been such a blessing to my life.
Right.
You know, I mean, like you, I didn't have much of an education. I was, you know, I worked hard, but I didn't really study hard and became very successful financially. And then realized there's a lot more to life than financially being successful, and that's giving back and helping others. So that's why I write my books.
And what you said is the key, and I appreciate people listening to this. You know, if you get one tip and use it. Now, if you don't use this stuff,
right,
it's worthless.
Right.
But there's so much negativity out there. You've got to read those positive books. You've got to read biographies. You've got to be around a seminar or conference or an inner circle or a group of friends that are positive, that are going someplace, that are going to help you. And I'm always searching out. I have 2 mentors right now. I'm never not going to have a mentor, whether it's your priest, your minister, your rabbi, your uncle, a friend, a successful person, or you pay for mentoring, which I do, because one idea can change your life and your business if you implement it.
You know, I was lucky early on because, you know, buying books, going to seminars, spending. I never looked at it as an expense or cost. It was always an investment in me, you know, and I never bothered to invest in myself as when I was younger in school. So now I have this opportunity. And when you look at it as not a cost but an investment in you, then it's easy to spend the money to become the best version of yourself.
That's right. And, you know, people, I do interviews all the time, like you, ABC, entrepreneur, and the first thing they go is, where is the best place to invest? Which market? Which city? And I'm like, oh, that's easy, in yourself. Because once you learn something, knowledge is power, education is power. Then you can't go back.
Yeah.
And that's what changed my life, just being around successful people who were doing it.
Yeah.
A lot of talkers out there and a lot of negativity. To this day, I have 5 to 10 people a day, no joke, Mike, tell me now is the worst time to invest, to start a business, do real estate. I'm like, well, that's interesting. I've been hearing that every day since 1994, since I started.
Right.
And guess when the best time is? Now.
Now, when it's crazy.
There's always an opportunity.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little challenging, and depending on what market you're in, or you got to know what you're doing. But what's wrong with now? The past is gone. The future's not here. And people always look for excuses. And the most important thing is only get advice from experts. Most of these people that are saying now's not the time, they've never done anything. Or they'll tell you not to do it.
Right. But let's talk about a young family. Like, I have four kids, right?
Holy cow. How do you do that? I want to take that seminar. Well, I got one son.
The best part now is I have seven grandkids. So my next life, I'm going straight to grandkids. Forget the kids, right? Because the grandkids, you can have fun and then leave them. See you later. So, okay, let me ask you this. So you meet your mentor, 29, teacher of real estate. But what about personal development authors or real estate experts when you were in your 30s that you kind of followed and taught you?
So what's really interesting, I learned how to do real estate from this gentleman. He only bought, fixed and sold, and bought and rent. Changed my life, forever indebted to him. And then I started, I wanted to learn more, wholesaling, commercial markets, taxes. So I was going everywhere, learning everything. Then what's really interesting, Mike, which I think you'll appreciate, is I started doing my own real estate seminars. People kept asking me, well, how do you make money in cars? How do you make money in real estate? Right. So I got tired of saying the same thing, wrote a little book report. That became a book, hand wrote it because I don't type, that somebody had typed it. And I started doing a seminar. People came to my real estate seminar. I told them exactly what to do, like my mentor had, and nobody did anything.
Oh. Then what'd you do?
Well, I'm like, why isn't anyone doing anything? I told them exactly what to do. Mental blocks, personal development. I went around the planet. And literally, one of the reasons I write books and do real estate is to make money so I can go buy more books and learn more things.
Yeah.
I went around the planet to study what makes people successful. I'm talking, I worked with the Dalai Lama, the military. I went, Tony Robbins. I went everywhere you could go. And one of the things I learned was, how does the military do it? You know, I'm very proud of our U.S. military. 1.2 million people from all types of background who make a really pretty good military force, respect. How do they do it? See, do, teach. They show you what to do 1,000 times. Here's how you load your rifle. Here's how you do the push-ups. They make you do it. Then they make you teach your partner. And you don't really learn anything until you do it. So then I redid my whole program, and we teach by learning, doing, see, do, teach. Same as the military.
And then the power of repetition.
That's right.
That's the thing that ingrains it into the subconscious mind. And so now it's an automatic. Right. You know, if we rely on our conscious mind, we get lazy, undisciplined. Yeah. But when it's programmed and it's in every cell, boom.
I went and became a master hypnotist. Like, you studied hypnosis, because I believe like you do, that 98.9% is subconscious.
Yes, yes.
You know, I've worked with supermodels in South Beach, or in the biggest magazines, and they go, I think I'm ugly. And because some uncle, right, when they were eight, said, right, you're ugly, right, or you're fat, and like, what?
Yeah.
Or you're dumb, or you're not good enough, or yeah, that won't work. And that loop stays in their head till they're 30, 40, 50, 60, and nothing happens. And until you work with that,
yeah,
no success.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember the book, Psycho-Cybernetics,
yes,
by Maxwell Malt. And he was a plastic surgeon. He says, I fix these, make beautiful, but they don't think they're beautiful.
They look in the mirror and see what they see.
Exactly. It's all programming.
Yes. 99% is subconscious programming. And I tell people, the power of the word. Please be careful how you talk to your children.
And talk to yourself.
And talk to yourself. Because I grew up with that stuff. What's wrong with him? He's no good. He's dumb. He can't do anything. He doesn't talk. He doesn't walk. He doesn't do sports. You know, he's an idiot. And that's why I wrote one of my books, How Come That Idiot's Rich and I'm Not? Because some of us idiots ended up getting over that stuff, yep, and learning it. But with that bad programming, it's never going to work. And you have to deal with it. And I didn't realize that. I had to learn. I had to study. I had to overcome myself. And you have to replace that negative programming with something much better.
So let's talk about the housing market in America right now.
Oh, boy.
And, I'm from California, so.
That's its own country, by the way.
And probably not a good one. But right now, so I start talking about my kids and my son. You know, he wanted to buy a house last year, and it was his first house. So I went ahead and supported him and gave him some money to help him. But I'm sure it's gone down. But where do you see it going forward? When do you jump in? I mean, especially in today's world.
So this is a very great question. And let's tackle it piece by piece. First of all, I think I'm going to blow some people's minds. Every time I get an interview, how's the real estate market? Where's the best place to buy, whether it's in the U.S., Israel, Europe, Africa, California? And here's my answer, which you're probably not going to like. So if you want to throw me out of your podcast. Number one is this. There is no market. And let me give you an example. Which market? First of all, California is as big as most countries. Even L.A., the new condo in Beverly Hills market moves different than the place 2 miles away. Let me give you an example. I lived in South Beach during the crisis, 2009, when nobody expected markets to go down 30, 40, 50% in 6 months. And certain markets did. My condo on the beach actually went up during the crisis. Why? It was on the beach. Right. And there's not many properties there. 1 mile away in Midtown, they built 40,000 new condos for $300,000, examples, sold them to somebody for $400,000. That person sold them to somebody from New York or California for $800,000. And then they went back down to $380,000 in like 6 months.
Yeah.
So which market? Even in Nashville, where I'm from, a million plus people, there's 22 different markets, the trailer park, the nice area, the not so nice area, and it all moves differently. Right now, there's still a few markets in America, like some of Nashville and lots of South Florida, that are still booming. And then you go a little bit away, and it's crashing. What really happened? First of all, supply and demand. You know, that's what drives any business. Second of all, real simple. In America, most people buy a house with debt.
Right.
And you know the interest rates went on a 30-year loan, you know, from about 3.5 or 4% or whatever it was to 6, 7, 8. And basically a $300,000 house, your payment went from $1,200 to $3,000 a month payment. People say, I can't afford that. I could barely afford it before. And so you don't get as much for your price. So a lot of people got out of the market. It's more expensive. It's pretty much interest rate sensitive. It's a problem. So what's going to happen? One, you got to be very market specific. What's going on? Now, why is California, parts of New York and other places gone way down? Real simple. Taxes.
Yeah.
And crime.
And crime. Lifestyle. And taxes went up. And a lot of people said, why am I paying all these taxes? I'm going to move to Florida or Arizona or Tennessee or somewhere that has lower taxes. Supply and demand. Jobs. Why is Nashville booming? All these hedge funds from New York and Amazon and Google's said, let's build, you know, all these 10,000 place workplaces in Nashville because it's cheaper, lower taxes, and it's booming. So you got to know your local market. But here's what I say. You got to live somewhere, whether you live in California, Florida, or Detroit.
Yeah.
So you're going to pay something for real estate, whether you rent or whether you buy. Now, if you're going to stay there a long time, 5, 10, 15 years plus, what's probably going to happen? Market could go down a little bit. I can't say every market, but what usually happens?
It goes up.
People are so emotional, panic. As soon as the market starts going down, they flip out and sell or leave or whatever. And so if you're in it for the long term, like I am, I buy rental property and I'm like, I'm buying it forever. You know, I'm going to give it to my kid, grandkids, foundation. I'm not buying it for a year. I can't predict the market.
Right.
Now, we'll tell you this, we've adjusted. So,
like, what's that mean?
Well, because I buy and fix and sell houses and rent them. So a lot of the more expensive homes in certain areas, because of interest rates and supply and demand, they're staying on the market longer, not selling as quick. Remember, a year or two ago, you put a house on any house on the market, any price, and you get four offers.
Right, right.
Those days are gone, back to normal a lot. So what am I doing as an investor? One, I always buy way below market. I don't want the market to go down, but I'm anticipating that it probably could.
So how many deals will you have to look at before you find that sweet spot?
Oh, boy. It depends what market you're in. In South Florida right now, we're looking at 50, 80, 90. It's hard.
Before you pick one.
2, 3 years ago, hard. Most people won't do it. Now, that can be phone call, contact. And I'll say some ways to get deals below market anywhere that a lot of people don't know in a minute if you like. But other markets, it's gotten more normal now. We make 10, 20, 30 calls, contacts. You know, it's kind of like dating. You know,
it's a numbers game.
You're not going to go walk out on the street and meet the soulmate of your life who's perfect. Right. You got to kiss a lot of frogs or frogettes or hold hands with them, whatever the word is, to find the right one. But they're out there. There always has been, always will be. Now, as an investor, and I hate to say this, please don't take it the wrong way, we prefer a depression.
Okay.
Because we buy from highly motivated sellers.
Yeah.
There's always a motivated seller in every market.
Yeah.
Not as many a few years ago. Now there's more. And I believe in many markets, there's more. Foreclosures are way up again.
Yeah.
So what am I doing? As an investor, I'm buying more bread and butter properties. First time home buyer stuff. Like, for instance, in California, first-time home buyer is $600,000.
Right.
You know, every market is a little different. But like in Nashville.
So what's your sweet spot? For a couple hundred?
Yeah, like 180 to 350, 400, okay. 200. And you got to know what you're doing.
And what about leverage in a deal like that? So are you looking to leverage that?
I always borrow money. Okay. I'm always using somebody else's money. But not 90% loan-to-value. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm buying it 20, 30% below market, maybe 40% sometimes. And we're leveraging 50, 60, 70%. And listen to this. Everybody knows someone that lost money in real estate. In my understanding, I have not lost any money on a deal. I've been involved by 2000 since 94. Why? And this is very important. Number one, I had a mentor. Someone watched me saying, Robert, dummy, don't do that. You're speculating. Too risky.
So super important. If you're going to get in this game, have a coach or a mentor.
Somebody.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm a person. Even me, I teach this stuff and I make mistakes. I'm a human being.
Right. You get emotional. You do the,
I'm in a
you
rush.
You don't see this. Yeah.
You know, I'm in a rush and I skip a few steps.
Right.
Whatever it is. Number two is I need two other sets of eyes that look at that contract, look at those numbers, say, Robert, you missed something.
Yeah.
And it still happens.
Yeah.
Number two, this is where I think in the last crisis, people went bankrupt. I had friends jump out of windows. They lost everything.
Right.
I don't think we're one of those now because that was a financial crisis, paper, anybody could get a loan. That was insane.
Right.
Oh, you're a waitress or a waiter?
If you could fog a mirror, you're getting a mortgage.
Yeah, and let's falsify some appraisals. We'll get you 100, 110% loan. I would go borrow money. I wouldn't give myself 100%. Why are you doing it?
It was insane.
That was different.
So this one's different.
I believe
so. But here's what I do think. Because now we're going into a recession. You're seeing the layoffs.
We're in a recession.
Okay, we've probably been in it for a while. But now you're seeing the layoffs. And so now I got this whole, and some people, you know, the good thing is there's not as many mortgages being adjusted as there were back in 08. Right. So most of them got fixed. But if you lose your job, and most Americans don't even have $1,000 in savings, if you lose your job, you get behind on these payments. And then the other thing, in the pandemic, a lot of people didn't have to make their payments, and now they do. So it's kind of like a perfect storm is what I see.
Oh, absolutely. We're in problems. But second thing I want to say about not losing money is you need plan A, B, and C.
Okay.
So when I buy a property, if I'm going to fix and sell it, I know the market may go down. You know, the president, ping jong, ping pong, could say right. something. A boat could be stuck in the Suez Canal. Remember that?
Yeah, right,
the
right.
whole. What's that about?
Right.
One boat gets stuck in there. You can't get anything from Amazon right. or buy a car.
Right.
Anything could happen. Be prepared for that. So plan B is I'm going to rent it. And I'm going to rent it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I won't lose money, but the rent's higher than my payment. And I'll hang in there till the market comes back. It always comes back in some degree, usually. And then I always have usually plan C, you know, sell it at a less profit. So I just get out, get my money back. There's always plan A, B, and C. But the market right now is really strange.
Yeah.
I believe in certain areas we're in for big troubles.
Yeah.
Like you, and not all areas.
Yeah.
Again, there's not the United States, like the stock market is not one market.
Yeah.
Liquor stocks go up, drug stocks go down.
Yeah.
Same with real estate. Trailer parks go up. Commercial right now, the big commercial places are hurting 12, 15, 20% vacancy because people go like, we don't need to go to work.
Yep.
We don't need to sit in these offices.
And those rates are getting readjusted, okay, because they're a little different kind of loan. So every 5 years, they got to readjust those rates, and rates are through the roof. And now these poor property owners are kind of screwed, right?
Right. And I'll tell you something a lot of people aren't talking about so much. Maybe they are, but I'm aware of it. Is this banking crisis.
Yes.
Now, what does that mean? A lot of banks don't have the liquidity.
Right.
They're losing money. They're losing depositors. What does that mean? They have less money to lend.
Yep.
When they don't make, you know, they're making tons of money. Hey, you need a loan? Yep. They're tightening on the lending, which they did after the crisis, which I think is good. You have to have a job and some credit to get a loan and a down payment.
Right.
And I'll give you another example. In Miami, for instance, which is a weird market, a lot of the people, South Americans, buy for cash.
Yes.
They don't care if the market goes down because they're buying as a safe deposit account.
Exactly.
So every little micro market's different. But I think a lot of people, as you said, it's really sad. I have multimillionaire friends who are two paychecks away from homelessness.
Where do you see the dollar, which since 1944 has been the global reserve currency, and it looks to me like it's being replaced. How do you see it? And if it does get replaced, now what happens to real estate?
So, you know, Mike, you study this stuff. We are at such an interesting time. I've never seen anything like this. Number one, the dollar is being attacked by Russia, China, maybe Brazil. Number two, I don't really understand all this. The Federal Reserve says they're going to make some digital coin. And listen, I'm the most patriotic American you'll ever meet. I love America. I don't understand why the dollar has value. They've printed trillions of dollars. If we raise income tax to 100%, took 100% of everyone's income, they couldn't pay the debt off.
Right. There's not enough money in circulation to pay the debt because,
you know,
it's fiat.
Our economy is okay, I guess. Better is better. Like people say, well, it's better than the other ones. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
And I don't really understand. And then you have the cryptocurrencies, of course, and, you know, all this stuff going on all at once. There's a lot of risk out there.
Yeah.
There's also talk of possible more wars. You got Ukraine. You got this China talk.
Yeah.
Europe. It's a really strange time. And then you have the artificial intelligence, which, as I understand it, in maybe next year, a few years, a lot of jobs, you don't really need them, which we're already having problems with jobs somewhere.
Yep.
I don't know what's going on. Now, the good news is people always need to eat.
Right.
And with all due respect, not to offend anybody, my mentor always said he was very religious and spiritual. He goes, three great businesses, Bobby. Call me Bobby. He's like, people need to live somewhere. They need to eat. They like to drink and have sex. He goes, but I'm not doing the drinking and sex business. And I guess most of them need to drive for, you know, some time.
Yeah.
So, but you got to be careful because things can change.
Let me ask you this, because part of the reason, you know, I came to Columbia was to build this healing retreat center. But I also wanted a plan B because I looked at the U.S. and I said, hey, things look a little shaky right here. Would that factor into you coming down here, kind of a plan B?
You know, I still do a lot of business in the U.S., and I'll tell you about the U.S. I believe there's big cause of concern, politics, other things, the economy, for sure. But I'll tell you this, one thing about America, do you remember in the 70s, we're finished.
Yeah.
The recession, the depression, the government.
No, remember dude, I was sucking gas out of other people's gas tanks when they
lined up. The Middle East, the gas cars. Remember the 80s, inflation, recession.
There's
depression.
Always something.
Then 9/11, they're like, New York is over.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, New York was busier than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, so
always something.
I do believe that America always somehow comes back. However, I love going there, but I don't like going there. Because not just the economy, the money, people are stressed.
Yes.
Not everybody, but you go in, you don't realize it till you leave. people are yelling at each other. You can't talk. If you mention politics, somebody's going to be upset, whatever you say. I've never really encountered America like this. And my grandparents, who, you know, left horrible pogroms and depressions and oppression and murders from Russia and the Nazis and all this stuff, were so American and so proud to be American and so happy to have a job and something to eat and an opportunity. And if they saw what was going on, some of the things that people are saying and doing, they'd be like, "What? Where is this place? What happened?"
No, I mean, my grandparents would be turning over in their grave. You know, we're lucky. We're born white in America. I was born in 57. You're probably in the 60s. You know, we had real opportunities. And I look at my grandkids today and my kids. I mean, it's not the same opportunities you and I had, right? And so you travel internationally. So how do you see that in other countries? How do they view the U.S.? How is America viewed by these other countries?
Well, I travel all over the world. And what's really strange is everybody still wants to go there. I mean, yeah. Here in Colombia,
yeah.
People are, you know, legally, they'll do anything to get there.
Yeah.
So there's still that American dream, hope, that whatever it is. But when I travel, I mean, I go to Europe and Israel, Middle East, and people are going, what's going on?
Right.
What happened?
Right.
You know, some of the things we did politically, which I find fascinating. But again, my focus is, I always say there's an opportunity. I have to make money now for my charities and foundations, you know, before for my family. So there's always an opportunity for someone who's willing to look in America. I still believe that, whether it's real estate or starting a business or high tech or selling stuff on Amazon. And what's always interesting, Mike, during the Depression, I've done study. I love history. I'm a history major. More millionaires were made during the horrible Depression. There was a lot of suffering. Right. So I believe for people that are open-minded, willing to work, anywhere, and here in Medellin, it's tough here.
Yep.
It's a hard place. I mean, the average income is $250. People go get a college degree, doctors, and don't make that much money. It's hard.
Yeah.
There's always somebody who figures it out.
Yeah.
And to me, it's attitude, looking for the opportunity. So when people, and I love this stuff, I love talking macroeconomics. I'm like, okay, I don't need to understand the whole economy. And I go back to dating. I don't need to understand. My grandmother told me this. Great example. When I was 16, my girlfriend broke up with me, dumped me. She might be regretting it right now. Anyway, hello, Carol. Anyway, she dumped me, and I went to my grandmother. I was 16. I said, Nanny, she saved my life positive. She said, my life's over. And this is back to business.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend left me. I'll never have or find another girl like that. And here's what she said. Robert, there's about 6 billion people on the planet. About half are women. All you have to do is find one.
Exactly.
There's right. 6 million real estate transactions, about residential, not commercial, in America this year. All you have to do is find maybe one for yourself, or maybe 5, 10, or 20 to make a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
It's possible. So I love the macroeconomic stuff. You have to know what's going on. It's a micro market, which state, which city, what's going on here, what are the jobs, what's this street opposed to, you know, Detroit, St. Louis, Memphis, where I operate. Yeah. You go 4 blocks, even here. You know, we're in the best neighborhood. Mike's living in this beautiful place. You go a kilometer away, a mile away, and it's Barrio Antioquia. It's a drug neighborhood.
Right.
A lot of entrepreneurs over there.
Right, for sure.
So it changes. So the question is, with all this great stuff, is, okay, I need to know this stuff. I have to understand it, especially in my room. But how can I make money?
Yeah.
How can I make a win-win? We do, you know, every deal we do is win-win. We're not stealing people's houses. Right now in real estate, I believe the next 6 months to a year, it's gotten a lot easier to buy good properties. We're getting great, better deals easier in most markets. And there's going to be a lot of problems, you know, up and down, sideways. I hope not, we're not going to some massive reset, depression. If anything's possible.
Right.
But I think we're in for some tough times. What does that mean? Problems for somebody, opportunity for somebody else.
So you're known in your books and your online courses and your workshops throughout the whole world of providing unique strategies for buying real estate. So what would be some unique strategies that our listeners, viewers could benefit from?
So first of all, this stuff works all over the world. We have students all over the world, Israel, Africa, Russia, Colombia, South America, Europe, U.S., Canada, Mexico. I've done deals in most of those places. It's pretty much the same. The words are different. Number one, whether I'm going to buy my own house, and you with the cars, you know, I will not pay full price.
Right.
So the quickest way to make money is to save it.
When you buy it, the buy.
So we look for highly motivated sellers, and we have like 100 ways to find them. I'll give you my 3 favorite ways right now. Number one, wholesalers. There are people in cars and real estate and any business that spend a lot of time looking for highly motivated sellers, put them under contract, and we'll pass them on to an investor.
For example, let me ask you, because I think after the 08 crisis, was it BlackRock and went in and all these big corporations bought all these neighborhoods and overpaid? Am I accurate in that?
A lot of them did. They went in and bought 8,000 homes in Tampa and some other place. Zillow tried it. And what they forgot, and they lost a ton of money.
Right.
And I actually talked to some of them when they did. I said, listen, It looks easy. It's not.
Right, right.
To manage property is hard. Most people can't do it. And they put in their little computer program, oh, we're going to manage them and fix them. And they paid too much.
Yeah.
They couldn't manage them and they just dumped them. Now, some of them have done okay, some of these funds, because the market just did so.
But what are they doing now if they have these massive amount of rentals?
A couple of them got really hurt and just got out of it. Yeah. And a couple of them have done okay and are still buying. But it's not easy.
And there's another guy that intrigues me, comes out of the car business like me, and that's Grant Cardone.
Oh, I know Grant.
What is he doing? Because he's, you know, he's marketing to every Tom, Dick, and Harry. You don't even have to be accredited to be a part of his fund. It looks like a good strategy to me, but I don't know.
So, you know, Grant, I know him and like him. I've done seminars with him. First of all, I like him because he's direct. He's like, you know, most people are lazy. Get off your butt. Respect for the guy.
Right, for sure.
Plus, he's taught a lot of entrepreneurs. Now, as I understand it, he goes out and buys apartment buildings almost at full price. That cash flow, that have a return.
Yeah.
And his strategy is to buy and hold, which usually works. But I like that. But I would say if I'm going to buy something, why not find a highly motivated seller, even in apartment loans, which is not easy, and buy 20, 25, 30% below market, because the market could go down 10, 15% easily, and then you can't sell, you can't get out. I want options.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's out there teaching a lot of people and doing great.
What blows my mind, you know, I got lucky in real estate in downtown Oakland. You know, I had all these car dealerships, and then it got rezoned high-density residential. So now the property went at 4X, worth more than the car dealership, so you dump the franchises and you sell the property. But what shocked me was the cap rate that these investors were looking for. I mean, they were happy with like 4% return for these massive investments.
Which makes no sense to me. Everybody's different. I don't judge anybody, but you know, the reason is, well, the banks were paying me 1%.
Right.
So I guess 4% is better than 1%.
Right.
But I can't make money on that.
No. It's such massive risk and energy and effort.
And I think part of that was there's so much monies out there.
Yes. There was too much
money. That's the problem. And that's when you have like a near zero interest rates, what I call free money. You know, it's not normal.
Right.
It was great.
It was free for like 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and it makes.
But now we're paying the price.
Right. It makes assets go up. Stock market, real estate. Now, whether it's a plan or a conspiracy or they do it on purpose, I don't know.
Right.
I'm open to all that stuff. But and now interest rates are more normal. And by the way, to me as an investor, I'm happy to pay 9-10% interest rates. That's normal for me.
Yeah.
But when they were like, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 2, crazy. So you got to look at history. You got to, you know, normal markets, normal prices, and, you know, the government can make or break you.
Yes, absolutely.
In any business.
Absolutely.
With the interest rates, with the tax laws, they can change something, whammo. And I'll give you an example. We were doing a lot of Airbnb in Miami. A lot of people were, they could pay like really high prices for a condo because you get $400 a night. And then the city of Miami or somebody said, hey, you can't Airbnb over here anymore. In one day, boom.
Done.
So that's why you got to have that plan A, B, and C and know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's why I'm never... My mentor taught me, going to pay full price. I always want to have one or two or three exit plans because things change.
Yep.
And always.
And what Robert's saying right now is so brilliant. You got to have multiple plans because especially in today's world, no one can predict what's going to happen next, right? And you said something interesting that, you know, most real estate buyers in America is leveraged, you know, 90% loan, 80%. Or down here in Colombia, it's very seldom that you run into somebody who has a mortgage on their home.
Oh, the loans are horrible here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get a loan. Like the best thing is 50%, and they do cash. It's a culture of cash.
Yes. But the beauty of that is you don't have these huge fluctuations.
Right.
You just have steady increases, you know. But over in America, you have all these bust and booms that because of the leverage. It's so highly leveraged.
And the interest rates, I mean, when they go from 3 to 7% on a 30-year loan, it affects things. And you have to know this. But again, there's always an opportunity. And right now, what I'm doing, a lot of hardcore investors are doing, is we know there's going to be more opportunities. We're raising money.
Okay, so you're putting together a fund, and then you'll go and buy a properties, and then you'll offer return.
That's right.
And what would be a good return today?
Well, I think everybody's different.
Right.
So, you know, historically, what do most people do? They lose money.
Yeah.
Gamblers, they don't know what they're doing. They get some funds. I read somewhere that over the last 20 years that the most mutual funds and money managers make about 6%.
Okay.
I mean, that's a real number. Some, of course, made less. Some made more. Some are better than others. And people have unrealistic expectations. I want to double my money in 2 years or 20%. So I'm doing we're looking for like a 14% return. We have a little fund, realpro.io, and you get in for like $1,000, but we educate people. We're not offering it here. And that's, you know, from rental properties and buy and fix a little bit. And that to me for a rehabber is pretty normal.
And that's a good return.
Yeah.
And would you consider it safe?
Well, first of all, every investment has risk.
Right.
But here's what I say. Don't let the banks make all the money with real estate.
Right.
To me, it's hard for real estate to go to zero. It's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
But if you buy it right, we lock in. And here's the thing about real estate. With us, as an investor, whether it's in my own house, you lock in the profit when you buy it right.
Right.
If you pay full price, you're speculating, praying that it goes up. And to me, that's what you have to do with stocks and crypto and all that, which is great,
yep.
is I can't get a discount on it.
Right.
But if you find a highly motivated seller, divorce, estate sale, foreclosure, bankruptcy, tired landlords who just bought it. Like I've sold stuff 25% below market.
Right.
You know, I bought it 20 years ago.
Just want out.
I want out. I'm buying a better project. I really don't care. I don't want to suck the last dollar. I don't want people to bother my tenants. I don't want to list it with a realtor. Just take it.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's motivated for different reasons. I've met people that won the lottery that said, I don't need to get full price for the house. I don't care. I just want to make $1 million a year for 30 years.
Right.
Or, you know, they have so much money that they would just give the condo in Miami at a 30% discount because they just had too much money. It's kind of like you're me throwing out a pair of shoes.
Yep. So you got to be patient when you're looking.
Yeah.
And you can't get emotional. You have to be business. All right. We got 30 seconds left. How can people find you? What's the best book they could read? What's the best online course they could take? And all that good stuff.
Well, robertshemin.com, S-H-E-M-N.com. And check me out on Instagram. And there's all free videos. I'm a big believer, giving people a lot of value. And then realprop.io has some really cool videos on there, educational about real estate and the new markets coming. And one of my most popular books is How Come That It Is Rich and I'm Not. Go to robertshemin.com. Say hello. If you have any questions, hey, we're here to help.
Yeah.
Ask me anything, and we'll try to get back to you pretty quick.
Well, Robert, thank you so much. You're a wealth of information. You've been a great guest, and I'm very grateful that you were with us
today. What an honor to be with you, and I want to wish everybody a lot of health, happiness, success, and enjoy every day and enjoy the process.
Amen, brother. Hey, I hope you guys have enjoyed this as much as I have. Check out Robert's work. He's been doing this forever. He's highly successful. Everybody in the world loves him, and he's a great guy with a big heart. So coming up next is our Mountains of Hope health tip. All right, guys, I hope you've liked the show so far. Now we're going to my favorite segment, and that's the Mountains of Hope segment. And Mountains of Hope is our cutting-edge transformational health retreat that we're building here in Medellin, Colombia. And I hope one day that each and every one of you are fortunate enough to come visit, do one of our amazing retreats, and have an experience in your life that will transform every aspect of your life. And joining us today from Mountains of Hope is Kelly. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
We've been talking about money today. So what do you have as far as money and Mountains of Hope and health?
So one of the things that we have here is the love languages. And funny enough, that is the financial love languages, which sometimes, I mean, we need to become a little bit fluent in them to understand whether our couple or our family, the people around us, because even money, we spend it with different ways.
Mm, interesting. So when I say, here, honey, here's my American Express card, why don't you go shopping? Is that a love language or what would you describe that as?
It is actually. We actually have the ones who love to spend, the ones who love to save, the ones who like to invest, the ones that actually like to protect their money, the ones who love to earn money, and the ones that love to borrow money. So there are all different languages. So when you give, I mean, that's a love language, which is the one that is giving, spending.
Well, let me tell you my little experience with the love language of money. And I think it'll put it in perspective and a lot of people will relate. And it will also show you how I've evolved on this subject excuse me. So when I was growing up, one of the first fights I ever remember my parents having, and it was intense, was over money. And the subject was how much my mother had spent at the golf country club, okay, feeding her husband's five children over the summer break, okay? And he wants to know why the country club bill is so big for that particular month. But what you know, of course, I didn't understand much. I was probably 10, 11, 12 years old. But the intensity of the fight is what blew me away. And it was simply over money. And as, even in my young mind, I remember thinking, well, if you can't afford it, why are you going there? You know what I mean? So then fast forward, I become a husband. And with a wife that really did have a spending problem. And I'll never forget, I had to say to her, I said, you know, she literally wrote a check for $3.99, and this was in the 80s, that bounced. And the fee for bouncing the check was $35.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay? So I had to do something, right? So I said, okay, here's how we're going to do, you know, from now on. Every Monday I'm going to give you X amount in cash. That's your budget. And spend it as you see fit. There's enough for food and that and for some stuff for you. And then if you want extra money, she goes, if I need extra money, can I go out and work 2 nights a week and you babysit? So we came to a really happy thing there. As I got older and of course, maybe made more money, I realized that fighting over money is ridiculous. You know, you need to come together on that. So, I teach manifestation and how to manifest money, so it's not that big of an issue anymore. But it is a big issue in relationships. So how can couples deal with this?
It's actually one of the reasons why a lot of couples sometimes even divorce. And I believe it's one of the things that you need to discuss even prior to to understand what's the language of the other person and what is yours. Because the thing is, we are normally more fluent in one of them. It's not that we don't have them all, but we are normally fluent in one of them. And to avoid these difficulties, these disagreements, it's important for me to identify mine and identify the one of my partner. For example, for me, I like to express love by giving things.
Yes.
Like to my parents, to my sister. I mean, that's the way that I express my love. So right. Normally someone will see me as an spender.
Right.
So in that, and like with those, yes, I am. On the other hand, my husband is one who likes to save, invest, and protect.
Which is good also.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's got to be looking at you. If you spend a lot of money on your niece, your nephew, your sister, your mom, he's going to go, hey, whoa, right?
What's going on here? So the idea is that even before when we were dating, so the idea is that he knew, he noticed that of me, and we were doing this. It's called the A-Date from Gottman. It's a date talking about money. So I knew how.
So this was part of the process before you got married.
Yes.
You go on a date, you talk about money, his exactly. background, his belief systems, yeah. and yours. I love it.
It's an amazing book. It's called Eight Dates. Eight. Yes.
Dates.
Yes. So each date is to discuss one is money, another is sex, another is kids. So different topics, how do we resolve issues? And it is that each chapter takes you to how do your parents spend money,
right.
for example.
Right.
How do you feel about spending money? How do you feel about another person spending money? So it helps us to understand what is your money language. Because the thing is, it has a story. So for example, people who normally save a lot of money, normally, they tend to see their parents having issues with money. So now they want to actually right. cover for that.
Right.
So it has a background in your subconscious of right. why you act in that way. Or if, for example, you have been someone who has been really like people don't let you spend, or you had a partner who actually didn't let you spend nothing, then you break with that partner and suddenly you said, I want to spend as much as I can.
Right.
So it has a story. And I think that each of these languages actually, the idea is to understand where does it come from, how does it help me, and how can I manage it?
Yeah.
Because it's not just about, I'm a spender, who cares, that's who I am. No, trying to understand why you like to spend, why you like to actually manifest your love through money.
Yeah.
Did you actually have something or someone before that actually didn't allow you to do anything at all? And that's why now you're kind of unfree. So it's identifying, and it's also to understand. So I know that you like to spend, or I know, for example, my husband likes to save, so I understand that.
Right.
So I'm fine with it.
Right.
So when we actually say, so let's allocate this money or this percentage to the things that we're going to spend, and that's what we spend without kind of asking each other.
Yeah.
And then he understands, when I give gifts, that's my way.
Yeah, perfect. Well, it sounds like an amazing book. For you guys out there, and I'm going to speak directly to my oldest son right now who's engaged, read this book, you know, because mm-hmm. I wish I would have read this book before I got married, each time I got married, honestly, because you avoid a lot of problems. And money is a big issue. You know, I'll never forget this. I was in a grief meeting, you know, a bunch of people, and this woman whose husband had been gone for 4 years. He had programmed her so deeply not to spend his money. 4 years, the guy's been dead. She still can't spend his money. And everybody's saying, lady, go spend his damn money. He's gone. But she was still the program that she couldn't do it.
Yes.
So that's powerful. What other tips?
So the tips will be just understand yours and understand your partner's. And that's will be the first thing. When you identify it and talk through it. I mean, talk about it. Talk about, I do believe that talking through things, because sometimes we think, because I believe this is my way, is everyone's way. And when we talk about languages, not because I speak Spanish, everyone speaks Spanish. And if I want to understand, for example, you, I need to speak English and understand your language. How do I say something that I want in your language? So, for example, when my husband, because I know he likes to save, so when I bring something up that is like an spend, I'm like, when we actually invest on this, we are going to save time by actually doing something
da-da-da-da. Right.
So it doesn't sound like I want to spend money.
So you position it in a way so it softens the blow.
In the language of the other person. For example, for him towards me, it's easier because I'm a spender. So.
Right.
But even with the people, and it's also not judging or criticizing the other person's language, because the other person's language is his nature, and it became because of story, because of the past or whatever, but we love through conversation to identify it. So it's also, I don't judge him, he doesn't judge me in my way. We come to agreements, we actually, whether budget together or we actually decide on big things together, there are things that he can do whatever he wants, I can do whatever I want, but it's about first understand yours, second understand your partner's, third talk through it, the third one talk through it, and the other thing, don't judge and don't criticize the other ones.
Perfect. Super powerful. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Hey, I hope you guys got a lot out of the show today. And I just want to add one thing about money and spending money and investing money. And this is one thing, I basically have an eighth grade education. And in my mid-20s, I decided to turn my life around. And so the only way to do that was books and going to seminars and investing in myself, which some people might look at that as a cost or an expense. But because I didn't go to school and I didn't go to high school, college and all that, and I didn't invest a lot of money, I always looked at an investment in anything like that as an investment in me. So I wasn't spending money and I wasn't wasting money. I was investing money in myself. So now it's easy for me when I want to go to this workshop or I want to go to this retreat center or if I want to buy this book. I don't even think about it because it's all an investment in my personal growth. So I think if you start looking at money that way, especially when it comes to things that are going to improve you, like learning another language, gaining another skill, investing in yourself, I think you're going to find that spending money that way is easier and also very, very beneficial for your heart, your soul, your life, your destiny, and all that great stuff. Well, I hope you enjoyed another show of The Power of Your Voice with Mike Murphy, and we can't wait to see you next week. Until then, go out, live with passion, and create the life of your dreams. Okay, now is my favorite segment, because it is my segment, and that's The Power of Your Voice with Mike Murphy. And today I want to talk to something about something that it's a little delicate, because I'm going to ask you to really start waking up, paying attention, getting good information, but not overdoing it, right? So these are crazy times going on in the world right now. I'm 65 years old. I grew up in America. It's just not the same country that when I was a teenager, early 20s, early 30s, early 50s. Something's going on there. Something's really weird. And the problem, as I see it, is getting true information. There's so many narratives. I jokingly say all the time, if you want to go crazy, I can tell you how to do it in 30 days. For 30 nights, you watch 1 hour of CNN, and then you watch 1 hour of Fox. And I promise you, you're going to go crazy because it's the same story, two completely narratives. Now, expand that out, going to the far right, going to the far left. Now there's about 80 different narratives that take you way, way out here and then bring you back into the mainstream, which is basically MSNBC, CNN, Fox. But, you know, between radio and alternative news on the internet, all these other stations, there's so much information out there. And what I've discovered and realized that everybody is pushing their narrative that feeds their agenda, and then therefore it feeds their pocketbooks. So take TV, for example, right? You know 75% of all ad dollars spent on broadcast television in the United States comes from Big Pharma? 75%. And there's only two countries in the entire world that will even allow Big Pharma to advertise. So are they pushing an agenda? Do you think they have control over who gets fired, who gets hired, what stories get covered, what stories don't? So just realize that everything that you're taking in has a slant to it, a narrative, an agenda. And so take everything with a grain of salt. You know, I'm sure most people are familiar with the four agreements, Don Miguel Ruiz, right? Well, there's a fifth agreement book that speaks to only just one agreement, and it's called Be Skeptical of Everything. Question everything. I'm sure people realize what the acronym for assume is, okay? When you assume something, you make an ass out of you and me. So my only suggestion here is, because where I'm going with this is money, okay? And how do we protect ourselves? You got banks closing. You got interest rates going higher and higher. You got inflation going higher and higher. You got dollars being created every second out of thin air. So all this money is being created. And then other countries in the world are saying, hey, you know, maybe we've had enough of King Dollar. Maybe it's time we need to create our own currency and protect ourselves. Because if we upset someone in America, they're going to take our stuff or they're going to knock us out of the global trading system. And then where are we? Well, that's what happened to Russia. So they've created their own global currency that they're trying to create with Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and many other countries are saying, okay, we want to be a part of this new thing. We want to be part of this monetary system that they're talking about backing with gold, where the United States right now is backed with nothing. It's paper and ink. It's a promise to pay, and it's really debt. Every time they increase the money supply, they're increasing the debt supply. So it's backed by nothing, right? It used to be backed by the petrodollar. The Saudis agreed to only sell oil in dollars, and now they're selling oil for anything. They'll sell it for Chinese RMB. God knows what else they'll take. So my point is this. We don't want to become crazy consumed with what's going on in the mainstream media. We don't want to be crazy consumed with what's going on in the alternative news sites. And there are some good ones on the left and the right. There's a lot of good ones, especially around the financial markets, you know, gold, silver, Bitcoin, stocks, bonds. Where do you put your money? Where is it safe? You know, real estate investing. There's all kinds of things. I think right now, for the next couple of years, we just got to really, really start to pay attention and look for news sites that we can trust. So it has to resonate in your heart and soul and in your gut. You have to trust it, right? And maybe find one or two, three friends or relatives that, you know, you guys think similarly. You see the the environment and the world kind of the same way. And, you know, maybe you meet once a week or every other week for an hour or so, and you have a cup of coffee or you have a Zoom call and you say, okay, what do you think about this right now? What do you think about that right now? Because you know the old saying, two heads are better than one, three heads are better than two, four heads are better than three. And I, you know, and why this is so important and passionate to me, you know, in the 2008 meltdown, I mean, I knew it was coming intuitively, but I never slowed down to pay attention to see what was really going on. How did I know it was going on? Well, at that time in my life, I happened to own four residential properties, which I'll never do again, and I didn't need it then. But, you know, everything was good. Money was cheap. It was easy to borrow. Hey, why not, right? And so, but here's what I noticed before the crash. Almost everybody in my family, from a couple of my kids and some siblings, the other people I knew, they were all in the mortgage business. And every 3 to 6 months, they call me up and say, hey, we're going to refinance one of your properties. You can pull out $100,000. Your interest rate is going down. Your payment is going down. I'm pulling money out. And they're making a big, fat, juicy commission. And I'm thinking to myself, this makes absolutely zero sense whatsoever. How can they give me $100,000? How can they lower my payment? How can they pay my relative a $25,000 commission? And do it again 6 months later. It just made no sense, right? So I knew something was off and wrong, but I never slowed down, took the time, and said, hey, what is going on here? What is really going on? Now, if I'd done that, you know, then I would have looked like a genius selling all my properties before the crash, taking all that money off the table, because I literally lost 50% of my net worth. That's my point. My point is, because of that, now I probably err on the other side of being way too conservative right now. I probably haven't gotten much of a decent return on my money the last couple of years as the market's gone way up after the crash and things like that. But now I think we're back into another place where we're headed for another 08 meltdown. Now, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not giving you a financial advice. All I'm really saying is, if you have something to lose, now is the time to really try and pay attention and figure out how you can protect it, okay? If you don't have anything to lose, then you don't need to be listening to this. You need to be out working and gaining something and building something. So you do have something to lose someday. But I know for a lot of people in my age bracket, you know, you've worked your whole life to get to this point. And if we don't pay attention right now, it could all evaporate quickly. So my only advice and suggestion is, you know, find some people that you like and trust. You can Google it. You can research it. They all have free YouTube videos. They all have free Twitter. They all have that data. That information is out there. If you want to know what I read, I look at like Zero Hedge. I look at like Breitbart. I look at Fox. I look at CNN. I look at MSNBC. I look at the gold guys. I look at the real estate guys. They're all out there, and they all got good things and bad things reputation-wise that you just have to be concerned with. But my point, and the most important point, is just don't trust one narrative. Okay, look at this guy, Jim Cramer, that's always on that show, you know, Mad Money. Everything he touts, okay, you can almost guarantee is going to tank. And so who's paying him? Who's paying him to say these things, right? So you just can't trust everything you hear and see. You have to trust yourself. And if you could get one or two close friends that you trust or one or two close relatives, and you guys could just, you know, say, hey, let's meet every Monday morning at 7 a.m. or let's meet every Thursday evening at 6 p.m., whatever it is, and say, hey, let's try to support one another as we go through these very difficult times, especially in the financial reason. I mean, the political season has gone crazy. I don't even know what to say about that. I say just ignore it, you know. The financial market is something, if you have something to lose, that's what you have to pay attention. As the layoffs continue to go up in the United States and interest rates go up, people are going to lose their jobs and they can't make their car payment. Eventually, they can't make their house payment. I really think we're looking at another 08 crash, maybe even as bad as the 1930s depression. So that's my only thing for the end of this show. You know, we're a positive show. We want to talk about positive health, positive wealth, manifestation. But there are also world circumstances that right now I think it's time to wake up and pay attention. So anyway, I don't mean to be Debbie Downer and be negative. I want to encourage you to, because there's also, this is a good time to make money. When it crashes, pay attention and then save some powder, keep it dry, and then you can jump back in and eventually make a lot of money, whatever's going to happen. But you got to wake up, you got to pay attention, and be skeptical of everything. We'll see you next week. Have a great time. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Your Voice with Mike Murphy. This podcast is brought to you by Mike Murphy Unfiltered, The Creation Frequency, Mountains of Hope, and the Love from Margo Foundation. These sponsors are dedicated to helping you unleash your full potential and live a life of joy and abundance. If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our website at mikemurphyunfiltered.com and subscribe to our podcast.